Enough small talk. Come forth, my servants.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan here.
And this is episode 190.
Oh yeah, 190.
It is a Patreon pull, which means that the game that we've been playing for the last 7 days was submitted by our patrons. In fact, three of them for this game in particular, Starquake, Grim, and Mike. But before we get to the game, I want to remind everyone that in less than a week, we will be celebrating a major milestone in the life of New Game Plus.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
Due to the abundant generosity. No, it's a good idea. They obviously wanted it,
It's a great idea that's going to end up being
amazing.
A really bad idea at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Why do we think anybody's going to want to watch it if all we're doing is down on
answer this question. Would you rather watch a train wreck or something that goes perfectly fine?
Because I get really, really entertaining when I don't have enough sleep.
YouTube training.
That's why people want to watch it.
There's going to be 3 hours of Kenny Heavy breathing into the microphone and just playing Hearthstone.
Or him falling asleep is what I'm hoping.
ASMR.
I hope he just passes out.
I don't want ASMR your nose breathing. due to the abundant generosity of our patrons, you've heard it here, we will be hosting our first ever 24-hour live stream. And that's all excited about it. I know it doesn't sound like it, and every time we bring it up, there's heavy sighs, but it's going to be fun.
For clarity, that's 24 consecutive hours.
I mean, no one thought otherwise.
No, literally, no one.
I mean, we've streamed 24 hours before.
Because I like streaming, and it's been a while since I've streamed on our channel, and so I'm pumped. I'm excited to play some of those games.
If it's a good game and Nolan gets invested, he could do 24 easy.
I can do 25 hours
but
easy.
Thankfully, we're taking different shifts so that I don't have to stream with these two bozos for a long time. But it's going to be Friday and Saturday, July 12th and 13th. 2019, starting at 9 p.m. Central. The schedule is up on our website, actually, as well as on our social sites. I think the web link is ngppodcast.com/24live. But you can just go to ngppodcast.com and you can see a link there. You can look at the schedule. Talk through the schedule a little bit, because we're not playing like at this hour, this game in particular.
Right. So we had a breakdown of the schedule where we allowed y'all to submit games for us to replay, ones that we've done on the podcast. So we'll have a block, Nolan's block, I don't know, at 3 a.m. And I'll have three games that y'all submitted that I'll play through. Then we also have a second block where we have personally selected games we want to play. And we did that for mercy for ourselves so that we're not always playing like retro style games, which is fine, but I'll be playing some Dark Souls. I'll be playing some Cadence of Hyrule. I'll also be playing some of the games y'all submitted, like, I don't know, A Link to the Past Randomizer.
And Chrono Trigger. Ooh. Kenny, what are some of the games you're playing?
I'm going old school, not in retro time, but in podcast time, and I'm going to play Earthworm Jim a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So nice. That's going to be fun. I'll redeem my experience with that game, probably, maybe. Or I'll solidify hating it. I'm going to play some StarCraft. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to play some Civilization when it's my free play turn.
And no, you're doing both. You'll do the original, I think, during your People's Choice, and the newest one on Player's Choice.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do some Civ 2 during the stream as well. You're right.
I think it's just regular Civ. But I don't know. We've gotten confused, probably got our wires crossed if that's a thing. But a couple of the games I'll be playing is Hollow Knight, Final Fantasy VII. I'm going to be starting up that new Doom up in this place.
Oh, sick.
And then for People's Choice, Bionic Commando, Final Fantasy Tactics, and Legend of Dragoon.
Dang, you're stacked. I think I'm pretty stacked too, if I remember correctly. We gave Kenny the Snickle Fritz.
We will do. No, he loves his games.
I know.
What's the Snickle Fritz and why do I get it?
Listen, I'll tell you what the Snickle Fritz is, but it's going to be at the end of the 24-hour stream. So,
okay, I'll make sure to tune in.
Mark your calendars, plan to hang out with us. We really don't want to stream all alone because that would most certainly be a drag.
Yeah,
Eula.
It's true.
Oh, wow.
No.
Like in our retro game of the week,
Castlevania.
Symphony of the Night.
Overview.
I have the great honor of doing the overview for Castlevania Symphony of the Night. It's a platformer action-adventure role-playing game. It's quite a few genres. It was developed and published by Konami in 1997 for the PlayStation 1. So this game is part of a series of Castlevania games. It's a very, very famous and popular series. I think that most people who would listen to us would have at least heard of Castlevania, but if you haven't, it's typically a platformer game, and it's got a gothic tone to it, and Dracula's involved, and whips, and a bunch of stuff. So Castlevania has a ton of games out, and even up until this point, the series started a decade before this game came out in 86, I think.
But all of those are left to right platformers.
Platformers, correct, yeah. And I'll say they did a dang good job of solidifying platformers. When I think of platformer, I might think of a couple games, and Castlevania is 100% in that group. They just killed it. They defined so much of what we love about the genre. But even though this game, the series started 10 years before this game came out, this is the 13th Castlevania release. And they've had a bunch of side games, like Game Boy releases and stuff. So I'm counting those in there. But even still, that's quite a few games in a decade. This one is really unique because it breaks out of the standard only platformer genre that Castlevania had established at that point. It introduces RPG elements and some action adventure elements and a bunch of unique things that we'll talk about. But I think the most significant one was that, hey, this is not linear. This is a free roam RPG kind of platformer. And so it mixed all those things together in a really standout way that this game is really popular for many reasons, but that's definitely one of the big ones.
They kind of set you up in this castle, this massive castle that you don't originally have the map to. And for the most part, you have free reign of the castle. Now, like the Metroid series, which I'm sure we'll talk about, the Portman.
Yeah, Portman.
Don't do it, Dustin.
No, I don't have anything. I was waiting for someone. I don't know if it's to or do, but there is a big thing here of Metroid and Castlevania. Again, we'll talk about that. But like Metroid, you are limited to certain places that you can go simply because you don't have the ability in yourself to go to a door you see or an opening you find. And so while it is kind of free roam, you are limited at the same time.
Right. And I think that branch from the main series is kind of is what really makes this one stand out for a lot of people. And it came out in PS1 era, so it's PS1 Castlevania, it's going to be good no matter what kind of genre it is. So it's just a really famous title. The directors for the game, the producers from Konami, Toru Higahari and Koji Igarashi, are really the ones responsible for this game, though I definitely believe that Koji gets more credit for this one specifically because I think he had the vision for it, and or at least the final product ended up being something he was very proud of. And he went on to be the lead developer for Castlevania the series after this for many years. and now just came out like a couple weeks ago with his own spiritual successor to Symphony of the Night. And he doesn't work for Konami anymore, but I definitely wanted to plug him here because he's very famous because of this game.
I think everyone probably knows it, and it's maybe not even worth saying, but I do think it's worth saying, so I'm going to. This is PlayStation. It's 1997. And a lot of games at this point are making the swap to going three-dimensional. And I know when we say platformer, everyone assumes 2D. Mm-hmm. But this was kind of almost mold-breaking in the fact that it was decidedly and intentionally 2D when gaming was sort of going away from that.
Great point.
Well, yeah. Even on the play, especially on the PlayStation, this is the year my baby came out.
Oh, yeah. This is FF7, huh?
Yeah. And so, so like this is the time that everybody's switching over.
Oh, yeah.
But not Symphony of the Night. And so, in part, because of that, it didn't release to universal acclaim. Like, it took time for this game to receive the notoriety that it now has.
So interesting.
And actually became such a notable title because of word of mouth. Just gamers playing the game, being impressed by the game, and then spreading it naturally.
That's amazing.
It's super interesting, yeah.
Because you're right. Graphics, that's what the eye catcher at the time. If you didn't have 3D, it was like, come on. I don't want a SNES. I don't want a Genesis. And yeah, it's a great point.
It's not unheard of like today for people to be like, I'm going to make a retro, 2D platformer, and it's a whole thing. But it's like they were already doing that. They were just the first one. And it kind of even feels retro. I feel like graphically when you look at it, until you realize like how good the fidelity and kind of things are. At first, if I was just glancing at the game and had to tell you, I would have guessed it was a Super Nintendo title just because of the style that they went for. Hmm.
And just around the table, want to see where we were at with this game, this series, before coming to it this week. And I'll just start. I had never played a Castlevania game, knew of it, but had stayed away from it. I've mentioned it before, but primarily because I'm not the biggest platformer, and then the theme, the aesthetic, the dark Dracula, Gothic. Hot Topic, doesn't naturally do it for me. So all of those things combined, I have never played one of these games. So this week was my entry into the series.
That's first of all, it's a great entry, but also impressive that you've dodged Castlevania for so long, because there are
impressive,
so many games.
Yeah, that's a word, but I don't know how, but that's what's happened for me. Kenny, are you comparable to me?
Oh, yeah, I will second the fact that we maybe don't deserve to have a retro gaming podcast by saying I'm exactly like Dustin.
Wow.
This is my introduction into the series.
This got interesting.
Yeah, and it's a great intro, but it just means I don't have a lot of contextual comparison to compare this to like earlier titles in the series, but there's tons of other games that it is like or different than that it reminded me of that I found really intriguing.
Yeah, and then my experience is just like very little with this game, Symphony of the Night specifically. I wanted to speedrun it a few years ago and quit because it's hard, but I have definitely played Castlevania games. Castlevania 4 for Super Nintendo is like one of the best games ever. It's not in my top 10 or anything, but it's so good. And so I was at least familiar with the series, and I do like this vibe, like Gothic, like the cover of Symphony of the Night. Go look at that. I'm down for that. That's right up my alley. So yeah, I had some experience.
Gameplay. Symphony of the Night begins probably like very few other games, no other games I've ever played before, because you start it by playing the end of the previous game. Is that
kind of
what happens?
Basically, you start it in a boss battle.
In the final boss battle of the previous game, if that's my understanding, because this is a direct sequel to Rondo of Blood.
Right, which is, it came out like several games before this. So it's not like Rondo of Blood came out the year before. There were games in between, but this is the sequel to Rondo of Blood.
So they're trying to get you caught up, and you're not playing the primary character in this game. You're playing as Richter Belmont, which is the main character of Rondo.
Yes.
And you fight the final boss battle, fighting Dracula, and then you've got this little text screen that comes up telling you that now we're 4 years later, and Dracula's castle has reappeared. Richter has gone missing, and now the son of Dracula shows up on the scene, like dashing through the night forest and into the castle before the door closes. And then the game begins proper with you playing as Alucard, which is Dracula backwards.
Edgy. You love that, Dustin.
I didn't even catch that. I always catch that kind of thing.
Yeah. Kenny. It's a cool name. Like, that's, when I first heard it, I didn't either. I just think it's a cool name. And it's also cool that Alucard is Dracula's son, because Dracula had, you know, with a human. And so he's like half Dracula. And so I think that's a cool backstory.
I've got an important question.
What?
Would you ever name your child Nalon?
I almost said my name like that when we started, but I thought that'd be a little extra of me.
I was going to do it at the end, but now it's probably...
Yeah, you kind of ruined that for us.
I stole your joke.
Mine would work. Nitsud. I mean, not a good one, but how do you say yours backwards, Kenny?
I don't know.
Wynick?
Enik? Enik?
Yannick. Okay, I can get behind Enik, but the
I don't know if that's how... Yannick, maybe.
This is not important.
This is super important.
This is
thanks, guys, for listening to our riveting
so
podcast.
Much to talk about with this game, and we're over here yinnicking.
Okay, let me say, because I've already admitted it, that my main worry about coming into this game was the dark vampire emo theme that would turn me off. We've had a few, at least one other game that we played as a part of this podcast that I felt the same and then played it and loved it in spite of the theme. The theme still doesn't ever do it for me, but if it's good gameplay, so Devil May Cry was the game that I'm referring to now. And playing this week, there is that aesthetic throughout. There is no like apology for that. You are fighting bloody skeletons, bats, and skull lords. That's literally the name of an enemy, a skull lord. But I'll tell you the truth, it didn't bother me one bit.
Yeah, it's not weird or heavy-handed about it. It's just like the wrapping that they put the theme in. And if you're telling a story and Dracula is going to be your story, you just sort of commit. And so... They don't get caught up in it.
No. I agree that it's a wrapping. I think that's a great way to explain it. But I don't think that that doesn't mean they weren't heavy-handed. I think absolutely.
So why didn't it bother you?
They were as heavy-handed as you could possibly be. It was insane, the amount of that.
The
that
dialogue with Dracula?
I don't know. If we're playing a sci-fi game, just because there's 13 aliens instead of 7, you're never going to say it's heavy-handed. It's just the genre they went with.
It's not about the number. It's about the number, the name, the aesthetic, the castle. The
so why didn't it bother you, though?
Everything. It didn't bother me because of what Kenny said, that it's a wrap. It's a casing for the game. They could have put any other skin on this, gone heavy-handed, just as heavy-handed, and it would have been the same quality that the game was because it's not for me in that aesthetic, although that might be a big plus in some people's book. In mine, it's not necessarily a minus, but for me, it was just a wrapping. It was just a casing for the game itself. This game is not all about story and dialogue and character development. Again, with platformers, action RPG, you're probably not doing a lot of character development. In my opinion, they could have done more story, but for what the reason why you're playing this game is because you like gameplay, and that's what this game's all about.
Yes, and gameplay's at the top of my list of reasons to play a game. So I was definitely on board with that being prioritized. So the way that this one kind of sets you up, besides the kind of plot stuff that we've gone over and how it intros with the previous game, you start as Alucard and you have all of his gear, and it's really OP, very reminiscent of the way Metroid games start, where Samus has all of her stuff, like the best suit that can withstand the heat and the best gun. Alucard's got a really strong sword. He's got this awesome shield. like he's really strong. And so you start the game and I'm like, all right, I can get used to poning everything in sight. But then quickly you get to a room and you're introduced to a character named Death. And it's just a Grim Reaper. So I'm sure, again, that was right on brand for you guys loving this genre. And Death steals all of that from you. And now you're back at square one, again, like in Metroid. So now you have to use your hand, your fists, until you pick up another weapon. And so I like that they did that, because it didn't bother you with the tutorial. It didn't need one, in my opinion. It just let you play the game, get used to the controls, because you're powerful and you can get away with doing cool jumps and taking some damage. But now you have to be careful. I don't know. I love that.
Yeah. Nolan, you said it didn't need a tutorial, and I agree that you can jump straight into the gameplay, but I actually think that there was room for tutorial that, with us playing not like it was originally, where I would assume Booklet would have made up for this, you know, like it often did in that era, although we're maybe a little past that in 1997. But the fact that you didn't just have your basic attacks, but you also had some really strong, really important combo driven sort of magic attacks is something that isn't ever communicated, but that actually is very important to learning to successfully playing through this game, in my opinion.
There are so many different elements and components to your character in this game. You've got the spells that you're mentioning there. You've got your primary weapon. You've got your sub weapon. And then you've got your armor pieces, which that's, you know, a helmet and cape and chest piece and, different things like that. And then you've got, on top of all of that, you've got your relics. So there's so many much. Different pieces there to your character, which that's the complete departure from the platform. They're going a totally different route. Maybe not the weapons, but when you add all of those pieces together, that's something new and something different. Weapons, you don't really have to explain. That's normal. Armor, we can kind of let that go. But the other three, I think we do need to talk about. I know you just mentioned spells, but another key thing here is the relics. And these are like magic items. I think that would is that what you would say, maybe?
Yeah, some are. Yeah, they're a magic spell. Most of them are. They have some function.
They're sort of your permanent power-ups, really, functionally. Yeah.
You can flick them on and off, though. That's the
right. When you go into the relic menu, you have on or off for each and every one of them. And so there's, I don't know, 20 of them, if not more.
Maybe even more.
You can turn them on and off. You find them around the castle and they upgrade your character for the most part. Although some of them are different. Well, I guess it's upgrades as well. Different abilities or transformations even, so that Alucard by the end of the game can turn into a bat, can turn into a wolf, and can turn into this just little cloud of gas. And then even on top of that, you can get some of your relics and use them as this familiar. You've got a few different options for this little friendly character that will follow you around and help you out in the game. So relics are a big component, a big part of the discovery and the progression in this game.
Yes. One of my favorite ones was the Spirit Orb. That's the one that lets you know the enemy damage. And so that one was pretty big. And I also really like the Leap Stone. That one was...
Nothing's better than the Leap Stone. It allows you to finally do a double jump, which is familiar in a lot of platformers. But in this one, you just start with a relatively low jump, and that changes the game.
And that's the cool thing, too, is that they designed the castle in a way that you would need the Leap Stone for some areas. Like, you can't get to it. And so, like, some secrets or just you can't get there. And I always love that. I really like it when they build the game so that, hey, you can't do this right now and you're going to have to be okay with it, but you can come back later when you get this relic or you get an item and it clicks with you. I'm a huge fan of that kind of level design. That's in a lot of my favorite games.
It's a really easy way to add time and complexity and creativity and things without, you know, having to totally redo an entire new map. Like, you can reuse that same asset and you just design it in a way where it sort of grows and expands as you go. And it's really well thought. And you're going to be doing a lot of that in this case, because You don't just need your mist form and your double jump and your flying bat and all of these things to progress in the game. You also need it to explore the map, because exploration is a really, really heavy part of this game. A, you've got hidden items. B, you've got differing endings depending on how thorough you are in your exploration throughout the game. You've got all kinds of things that really encourage you to not just go through and play, but to truly explore every nook and cranny as thoroughly as you can.
Can we talk about sub-weapons? There was mention of it, and I really liked them.
Yeah, sub-weapons is just another component of your character. I'm glad you brought it up back, because sub-weapons are not your primary weapon that you're going to be using, but you've got a list of, it's not tons, 6 or 8 maybe, mm-hmm. sub-weapons that you can press up and your attack button, and it does an additional weapon at the cost of ammo, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got the health bar, and you also have the mana bar. And I, at first, and I think in a lot of even Castlevania games and just games that implement a sub-weapon or like a spell or something, I often just default to manual, like primary attack, just like button mashing. That's always been my play style. But in this game, and I didn't hear it at first either, but in this game, once I started using the sub-weapons, I was like getting addicted to trying them all. And they're so much fun. So the first one, and I even used it in my first play a little bit, is the axe. And the game, I think, gives it to you. It might be a scripted drop. It gives it to you before the first like mini boss or boss fight, whatever. And it's very good in that fight. And so you kind of start experimenting with these weapons. And the axe just kind of lobs a projectile above you. And it's just, it covers that kind of arch above you that you can't normally hit. So that one was cool.
Is that your favorite one?
No, that's my favorite one. My favorite one's the rebound stone. I don't know if y'all guys.
Yeah, it was played Dustin's around with favorite it. Too.
The rebound stone?
Yeah.
No.
No, I think Dustin's is the holy water.
Oh, are you trying to guess?
Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate you trying to guess, but no, not at all. There is one that I used far more than any other, and I don't know why, but it just worked for me, and it was the holy water, the little vial that you just toss on the ground, and mm-hmm. it does some multiple times of damage, one after the other, to an enemy. I prefer that one by far.
Yeah, that's a staple of the series, by the way, the holy water. That's always a subtype.
Well, the thing with these and with so many of the enemies and every other thing, as I started looking into the previous entries in the series, so much of this is a part of it. Mm-hmm. So like very little in here is like completely new. The majority of it is modified, adapted, and improved for this game from the previous games, which I, a story guy and someone who, you know, if I like this game, I want to start it now from the very beginning and go all the way through the series, which with how many games is going to take me a while.
But it's a ton.
I really appreciate that they carry a lot of that through. So I really liked the holy water. You liked that little ricocheting stone.
Yeah.
And then Kenny, what did you use most?
I don't know if I used it most, but Rebound Stone was also my favorite.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say, I don't know. And I was going to say, come on, dude. The cross was good too.
Cross was good, but with Alucard, it takes so much of his...
It does, the mana.
Of his like ammunition, so it's not worth it.
But I will say it was very confusing initially that your HP isn't connected to your hearts. That's super non-game standard and was very confusing to me.
And it is weird. They didn't need to use hearts for that, in my opinion. I'm just assuming they started early in the series and did that because it could have just been HP and MP, right? Like health and mana. Right?
Or find like, something else to represent that. But it was really weird to be collecting. And I'd be like low on health, obviously, and run around and like collect hearts and it wouldn't do anything. And it was really frustrating initially.
Yeah, that's another Castlevania weird thing. I don't like it either. It just goes against everything we know about video games.
Another weird thing, you're collecting currency at the same time.
Yes.
And there's only one place to spend it. Is that true? In the library?
I think so. That's the only place I know of, but again, I don't know the game.
I think there's only one place to spend it, and it's worth spending some money there, upgrading shields and weapons early on, but you can also get a map of the of the castle, and then you've got a dimly lit map then for that you can press select and always see where you've been, where you haven't been, and you can kind of fill those in because there's a tracker for completion of this. Game is a completionist either dream. It's their dream because it's got, you're trying to completely go to all of the areas, collect all the items, fight all the enemies to fill out your bestiary. There's just so many collecting type things here.
So many items.
That I thought was a bummer is that with the map, or when you go into a new area, you see the name of that area come up on your screen, and then you never see the name of that area again. Mm. And that was a frustrating point to me because I couldn't even go to my map and see what the different areas are. There could have been more clarity there.
Did you use a guide?
I did. Yes, I did.
Okay, I did too. I mean, yeah, without that, it's a frustration. It becomes a problem because definitely modern games have improved on this. Like Metroidvanias nowadays, let's use Hollow Knight, for example, mark out areas on the map and even like some visual, you know, something that looks a little different on the map. But here it's just a blue rooms. It doesn't look, you know, it's not styled a certain way on the map. And so, yeah, you're going to be lost. But if I can be honest, I'm okay with being lost in a game like this, like a giant castle. I'll just explore, even if I revisit the same rooms.
I agree. And I'm okay with being lost as well. I just would like to know where I'm lost at. Like, this is what I mean. There's 15 rooms in this castle, 15 areas. And each of those areas have, you know, 5, 6, 7 rooms. And so it is a massive castle. And so to know, and some of them you can aesthetically know where you are. If you see a bunch of books in the background, you're probably in the long library, right? But for a lot of other areas, it's not necessarily intuitive. And so you don't know if you'll be in the cursed prison or the marble gallery. You don't know if you'll be in the royal chapel or the castle keep. And I would like to know which area I'm particularly in, especially if I'm using a guide. But even without that, I think it goes back to my roots and desire for there to be consistent story elements. Mm-hmm. And I wanted this week that story a little bit more. You get a few run-ins with some characters from previous games that they have a little bit of dialogue back and forth, but it's not building out the greatest story. I mean, the story is Richter's disappeared and Alucard's looking for him.
That's
the story, and the castle has reappeared. Right. If there was a little bit more story there, along with, hey, here is the area that you're in and all of those things, it would have really been helpful for me. But missing those things, it's very, 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 very easy to get lost in this game.
True.
And that's a part of it.
Aged.
Dustin, you mentioned that this game over time kind of grew in terms of like respect level. Maybe that's what you're saying, or maybe I just misheard. And
yeah, something along those lines. When it came out, it wasn't a hit. And now you know the notoriety that it holds.
Yeah. And I think that's such an important thing to point out, especially in this section, because every time I hear about Castlevania, it's this one. And I've had many people recommend it to me over the years. Discord was so excited when this game got picked. I'm just so fascinated that I'm just happy that the developers or the directors of the game knew what they wanted and stuck to that. Because I'm sure Konami or Sony was like, hey, we need to sell consoles. Can you do a 3D one? And they were like, no, we're well into this. We have a vision. And they did it regardless of what the initial reaction would have been. And so it's so cool that like time healed that. And now this is the game. This is the Castlevania. I think that's so awesome.
I will say here, this is still a platformer, right?
I think Absolutely. First and foremost, it's a platformer. Yes.
First and foremost, it's a platformer. I may have never played a platformer with controls as smooth as this one. I'm not good at platformers, generally speaking, but this one's very forgiving. There's not one fault to your death area, which is nice. And some platformers are like weak, you know, but I really approve that. Y'all are having to think through right now, but there's not. Can you think of one?
No. I mean, there's places you could fall and then die, but only if you like land on spikes or things that actually aren't a fall to your death.
But it's not even instant death there. Like, you still have to lose your health. And so the controls just felt super tight. Every jump was with precision. Every strike hit boxes were perfect. And then as my character grew, then I felt more and more and more in control. A good platformer, a good game is one where you, where as your character levels up, that you actually feel more and more powerful and more capable. And because of the handling and because of being able to get those double jumps and the slashes and the backwards dash, which we didn't even mention yet, and the quick change into one of my animal forms and different things like that, all of that just felt really, really good, especially by the end of the week.
Yeah, and I think if you're going to prioritize gameplay like we mentioned, it's got to feel good. And I also think that some of that survivability you're speaking to is them introducing some of the other genres. Like, yeah, platformer first and foremost, but then they brought in, you know, RPG, and you've got a health bar and an action adventure game. And I think you're right that some platformers would be like lame, because like Battletoads fans or something, because that game's ridiculous. But I'm with you. Like, just being able to get familiar with the controls in the game aged beautifully. Like, I feel like it was almost ahead of its time in how crisp and responsive it was. It was sick.
Yeah. You say that was a standard for a platformer, and I totally agree. They do it really, really well. The one that worried me as we talk about like how the game aged in terms of a standard is to have a game like this that is going to be popular because the series is already popular, and then intentionally or not to drop the term symphony in the title. You're taking a big risk as to how good you're going to be on delivering music. And they did an amazing job of dropping a soundtrack for this game. It was unique. It matched the levels. It changed tone as it needed to. And I think that was one of the pieces that had me the most hyped as I was playing. There were literally a few tracks that as they like developed and then built, I got stoked just listening to the music.
Well, and the thing that is so appreciated, I believe that I'm correct, is that in the 15 different areas of the castle, you've got 15 different tracks, that there is a different track so per sick. Area. Yeah. And so it works with the theme that's going on there. You're not going to remember it most likely, but go and listen to it after this episode. The music in Olrox's quarters is the best. Do you know what it made me think of? It made me think of Kingdom Hearts.
Ooh, yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
And I might be off. I've only played one Kingdom Hearts. I've watched some of them, but
no, I think you're right.
It's just this beautiful symphony. I mean, it really works there that they I agree with you, Kenny. It is a risk using a word like that to describe your game. And they weren't going for something musical or melodic, I don't think.
Although
they still use the word and it works.
I kind of almost think they did go there in terms of like, yeah, this is a symphony in terms of, you know, as a game, but also let's introduce a soundtrack that influences the player and makes them feel something. I don't know. I agree. Very sick. But what is weird and strange is that I'm usually a music guy, but I think the graphics, probably the best part of this game, at least in the aged section, I was blown away by the graphics. I love pixel art, and especially for like items. So there was an inventory screen in this game, which was new, and it had a picture for everything. And there are a million items in this game,
like a unique picture
for every piece of food, every weapon, everything. And that level of detail, I freaked out, and I'm still freaking out. I'm a huge fan of the graphics.
There's 100 different monsters and creatures, and each of them operate differently, which that's hard enough to do.
Yeah,
but each of them look vastly different as well. You've got flying mammoth beasts. You've got small little annoying creatures. The most annoying, I don't remember what its name was, but it was this little, it's not a frog, but this little, like, I don't know, creature, humanoid creature that jumps at you. Later on, they come in suits of armor, so you have to knock off the armor first and then kill them. Just super creative. And then the boss battles, but not only the boss battles themselves, but the design of the characters. Beelzebub was the most terrifying battle that I've done in many games. The backgrounds, all of the areas were fully realized environments, and that all goes to the graphic design. There might only be a few games that graphically do it better than this.
Yeah, like no one is this detailed. And still, they're not as detailed as this. They reuse assets, and of course they did that here, but like, man, it stood out so much in such a good way.
Yeah, there were literally non-mini bosses that I may be wrong, but there were literally non-mini bosses enemies that you encounter once. So like an enemy that they made that was creative and unique and standalone that wasn't a boss that you just fight once.
Sick.
That willingness to be creative and make a plethora of enemies is just, it's super cool.
If you are intrigued by Castlevania Symphony of the Night and you want more, you've already heard there's plenty for you. You could play Castlevania, Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, Haunted Castle, Castlevania The Adventures, Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse, and I could go on and on, but I won't. There are so many ones. The one that came right after this, I don't know in like timeline, but in the same year was Castlevania Legends, but Castlevania 64 was a couple of years later. There's so many games here. You'd have to talk to someone else that knows the series better than I to tell you what games to play in what order, but there's plenty Castlevania if you're interested.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game that we played gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Kenny, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. I don't think this one's going to be surprising. We talked about this game's growing popularity over time, and it grew in popularity for me this week. It started off a little rough. Some of the things weren't obvious if you haven't played other Castlevania titles, and I talked through some of those. You go from feeling like you're owning stuff to the game being fairly difficult early on as the armor's all taken away, and then there's some mechanics that aren't real clear. The magic's kind of hidden. And so I had some early frustration, but as you get over it, as you embrace the exploration and as your character levels up and finds new and amazing gear, you just find a really cool world to explore and fight your way through. And it doesn't surprise me that this one is pretty high up on people's lists of like great games like of all time, because it's a really well thought out, clearly well crafted title, and it worked for me after a little while. And so New Game Plus for sure.
I was interested probably most to hear your thoughts on it, Kenny, because out of all of us, I would say that probably this is not your game most. Like, this is not typically a game you would go to. So I was super interested to see where you would land. Would you say that you ended up enjoying it?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But some of that, I think, was the things that were unique about this title. The RPG elements were fun. I spent more time menuing and deciding which item and gear and which relics I was going to use than I probably should have for a platform game, you know? So I don't know if I would enjoy earlier titles in the series as much, just kind of personal preference. But this one mixed it up in ways that kept it fresh and kept me always looking for the next thing to unlock or do or buff myself with. And so, yeah, it worked for me.
Cool. Nolan, how about you go and I'll go last?
Okay. So this game is maybe one of the best video games of all time. It is very, very impressive to me when someone takes a concept, and clearly they had a vision for this one, sees it through, and then commits to it. And I mentioned that earlier, but time has been kind to this game. I'm really upset that I didn't play it when it came out. I didn't have a PS1, had an N64, but I knew of this game and friends had told me about it. And I was like, yeah, I'll play it one day. I really took the time to play it this week, like in depth. And I've realized that they took a defined genre, a well-established genre, platforming, and showed everyone what it can be by introducing all the elements of, you know, RPG, action adventure, exploration. And it's one of the best video games of all time. You should definitely play it. You have to, in GP for sure.
That's two thumbs up, two affirmatives. So it does get our vote. I have been a little bit conservative in our conversation of the game so far. Wanted to give it a fair shake. But here in my summary section, I just kind of want to give my final thoughts and opinions and just say that Symphony of the Night did something special for me this week.
Yay.
I've already said that I hadn't played it before. This was the first time that I came to this game, came to this series, and minutes in, maybe, I was enamored. I had family here at my house all week, and I had to keep sneaking away to just get 10 minutes yes. of play sessions every chance that I got.
Yes.
Doing that and finding a few significant times to play, I put in over 10 hours this week.
Ooh, nice.
I wanted to beat the game, but I fell short until a few minutes before pressing record today. And this past week, I beat Castlevania Symphony of the Night for the first time.
I'm so glad you dropped that bomb on us.
You that know what I'm talking about, you or know this game, you might ask, okay, so what? You beat the normal castle? My answer would be yes. And then I beat the reversed castle as well.
Oh my gosh.
You can clear this game with 200%. The only thing that I'm sad about is currently I have 198.9%.
Oh, no.
That's depressing.
It's just because we had to record. I'm going to go find these last couple of rooms. I agree with Nolan, one of the best games of all time.
Yes,
if there was more story in this game, it would be one of my favorites of all time.
Yeah.
But it's definitely top three games we played on the podcast.
Yeah.
Blew me away, and I absolutely love Symphony of the Night. And Symphony of the Night is New Game Plus certified.
Gosh, that's hype. Yes.
What did you think? We had many people write in this week.
Oh, man.
Guys, we typically have two, three, if it's a game that people really want to talk about, five. Mm-hmm. We had 13 people writing this week.
that should tell you more than anything we've said about the game. That should tell you how much people like this game, sort of corporately.
We are, as you can imagine, not going to be able to read all of those live on air. That's going to be impossible. But I want you to know Bryce, Scott, Jeff, Labs23, Coconut Wizard, Tercia, William from England, all of you guys that emailed, all of you guys that wrote on Discord, whatever you've done, we've seen your commentary. In fact, we're going to keep it up longer this week. Is that what we decided?
Yeah. We'll leave it in Discord so you can read it.
Leave it in Discord. We should capture what was sent to us in email and throw that up in Discord too, just so people can see what other people have thought about this game. But go and look in that commentary section. We do want to read a few here. And one of the ways that you can make sure that your commentary gets read when you send it in is support us on Patreon. If you support us at $3 or more, then you get front of the line treatment, which means if at all possible, we're going to read your commentary on an episode. Feel free to do that. Some of our listeners have done that. Ben is one of them. Now that you guys are finished gushing over how awesome this game is and awarded it NGP status, I want to talk about how Castlevania games were very different before this one.
Mm-hmm.
Then Symphony of the Night changed the formula by blatantly copying Super Metroid, and the term Metroidvania was born. But what did Castlevania do to deserve the Vania half of the portmanteau? For example, games were just called Doom clones until the first-person shooter was used. Or more recently, the term GTA clones paved the way for open-world genre. Why was this game not just called a Metroid clone?
Hmm. That's a good point. And actually, Ben brought that up when I met him for coffee recently. I didn't know what he was talking about, but I totally see now.
You're just sat there like, what is
that's a big question. I don't know.
It is a big question. I'm sure there's something to it. So we had mentioned it earlier. Metroid kind of, I don't know, Metroid created it. Symphony perfected it. I don't know.
I don't know about that. But Metroid sure created it. He's right.
Yeah, you could honestly argue that it's just the next iteration of the Metroid sort of style. That's no, where it came
that's what
from.
He's arguing. But,
oh, totally.
But that's not what the... It's stuck as a Metroidvania. That's the phrase.
Look,
but
we ain't changing it now.
No, but A, it's to sort of pull in games that are like both of them, you know? Like, no one wants to say, oh, it's just a... It's like Mario. So partly it's a practical thing, but partly Castlevania was fun and unique and did the things it did, exploration and the RPG elements and some of those kind of cool things really well. Also, I'm going to say Vania is just a really great way to end a term
end
when you're
anywhere.
Making up your own term.
Yeah. We're yeah. New Game so Plus I'm, Vania, honestly.
Right. I'm saying the asterisk and the real answer is that it just sounds cool. And
yeah,
so,
I'm with you.
Yeah, well, Metroid did it, but Vania made
I will
it sound
say,
awesome.
Castlevania did some additional things with the role-playing elements, with the like upgrading your character. No, so you can upgrade your character in the other games, but like the different weapon, changing those out, the relics, all of these different things.
Actually leveling up.
Yeah, I think my boy Symphony of the Night did it better. But Astral Orange said, hopefully I don't need to tell you guys what makes this game so critically acclaimed. I could list countless reasons but I'll leave that to the podcast. I wanted to comment on how epic the soundtrack is. Castlevania mm-hmm. is one series known to have consistently fantastic music, and this game has arguably the best one in the series. Every track is varied and fits the area it plays for. The soundtrack is highly listenable by itself and ranks high on my list of greatest game soundtracks of all time. If you didn't talk about it already, what did you guys think of it?
Yeah.
We did talk about it already.
So just skip it?
No, but we totally agree.
Yeah, and the games before this, that's a good point. This series is known as having some of the best video game music, and that's true. Go listen to Castlevania IV soundtrack and this one. I thought this soundtrack's amazing.
Garlisle said, long hallways filled with one repeating enemy. The difficulty curve of a fuzzy carpet concealing Lego brick sounds like Symphony of the Night to me. Issues aside, this game redefined a genre and a series for a reason. The presentation is amazing. The secrets plentiful, the scope vast, and the gameplay fluid and deep enough to heavily reward mastery. It might not be my favorite, but it holds up well and remains a high standard against which other games are measured.
Yeah, undeniable, even if you don't really care for it.
Yeah, it's not perfect. It's got its problems there. The repeating enemies, I don't know if I'll give you that one just because there's a plethora of enemies. One hallway might have the same one over and over, but
yeah, you're perusing the hallways enough, though, that killing that same actual exact thing for the 14th time is a little frustrating. I totally get that. Mm-hmm. And philosophically, just I may never play a game where grabbing a heart doesn't increase your health in some way.
Oh, my gosh.
That's just like so wrong. But yeah, the flaws don't come anywhere close to outshining the shiny parts.
Starquake said, I kept hearing this title mentioned on podcasts, YouTube videos, and other places. They all called it the best game ever, but somehow I never took the time to play it. I was very glad it got picked from the Patreon pool because now I had no excuse anymore to hold off playing this game. I haven't played it enough yet to tell if it's really the best game ever, but boy, is this a good game. There's so much atmosphere, amazing music, beautiful pixel graphics, some cool 3D animations here and there, interesting enemies and boss fights, and cool RPG-like mechanics. I love it.
I love it too. I don't think it's ever too late to like jump into a game that you've heard about either, especially one like this.
Yeah,
I
love Starquake. I mean, we're kind of similar. I had heard all about it and probably just didn't believe the hype, and the hype is real. Finally, Tom said, this was a first play for me. Gave myself permission to play without a guide and just enjoy the experience of getting lost and slowly finding my way. If anything, Symphony of the Night is a masterclass in creating a rich and rewarding atmosphere with its excellent sprite work and animation, diverse and driving soundtrack, and secret nooks and crannies one would expect to discover in an old magic castle. Ended the week with 100.3% completion, but I'm far from finished. 100.3% New Game Plus for me.
Y'all are beasts. I didn't have the time I wanted this week to spend on it, but I'm not done with it because, hey, well, one, I'm planning on the live stream. But
right. You find time for the things you love, Nolan.
Yeah, my wife.
As always, you can send in your thoughts and commentary on the Retro Game of the Week to ngppodcast.com. Again, we apologize. We weren't able to get to everything, but we'll keep it up in the Discord so you can check out what everyone's thoughts were for Symphony of the Night this week. But for now, we're going to find out what the next game is, but we're not going to randomly select it. Should we still play the little randomizer sound just because I feel like people need it in their life?
People are going to miss it.
Tom's choice.
Tom's choice. If there's a place to throw it in, Tom. Like right now.
So the reason we're not picking a game is not because our summer pool party is continuing. This isn't just any normal special kind of week. We've got an extra special episode coming up. Yeah, extra double special coming up because we're doing something for the very first time. We have had a what we always thought was sort of crazy, unattainable pie in the sky patron reward for somebody who wanted to go above and beyond in their support in such a way that we thought it would be worth honoring them by bringing them on the podcast and talking retro video games with them. And so we're doing that for one of our patrons for the very first time. So Limit Break next week will be a guest on the NGP podcast, and we'll be talking about a game of his choosing.
And the game that he straight up chose, he has so much power. There's no randomization involved.
I know, I love it.
He straight up chose a game that he has a deep connection to. It is a game that came out in 2002. It's in the survival horror genre. It was developed and published by Capcom, if that doesn't tell you anything.
Like where you're going.
But it is a remake of a 1996 PlayStation game by the same name. We will be playing on the GameCube, Resident Evil.
Amazing. I'm so happy.
So
I think
Resident Evil is great. We're staying in this like dark territory.
Yeah,
which is
no, I love it.
It's your favorite genre, Dustin.
It's one of mine.
Yeah, so we are going to play Resident Evil for the GameCube this week. Again, this is the remake, which he says is just a vast improvement on the original, which that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. It's on PC as well, but we're going to play it on GameCube because that's where it first was re-released. But if you want to play and you don't have a GameCube, you could pick it up there on Steam. It's going to be awesome. Join us in Discord this week. Discord is a great place for you to connect with us. We talk to you. We actually talk to you. We're not famous people. We're normal people. Go to ngppodcast.com and click join us in Discord and start chatting.
We already pointed out how awesome Limit Break's support is, and we want to give a couple of other shout outs to some patrons who have supported us at the producer level. So big thanks to Richard, Zach, Corey, Dear Baby, Maxima, Grimm, Garlisle, and Zion. And a big thanks as well to a brand new patron supporting the show this week. Pogs are back.
You know they are. You can find us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast. Our YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast. Or just go to our website. All of it's there, ngppodcast.com. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. And make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. While you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our friend Tom Tate. Join us next week with Limit Break as we play Resident Evil. Until then, I'm still Nitsud.
I'm still Inek.
I'm Mr. Belmont.
And I'm Dracula. The voicing was so bad in this game, by the way.
It actually was the worst part of the whole game.
And this has been New Game Plus.